Hello and welcome to another episode of Midwest Magic. This is episode 18 and I am your host, Ethan Richardson, with my co-hosts,
Justin Washburn
and Mike Thompson.
Oh, I hope he talks like that for the whole cast.
I can't do it.
All right. Well, we've been off for a couple of weeks, holidays and whatnot, and just trying to, you know, get my life situated, and these other guys don't edit the podcast, so it's really all on me. But, you know, it was nice to have a couple weeks off, not a really whole lot happening anyway, so there wasn't a whole lot to talk about other than some spoilers, which is what we're going to do today, after we talk about the only Magic tournament that's happened since we're going to forget that the Invitational happened at all. the Star City Games was in Cincinnati playing Modern. My Modern brethren, was there anything particularly interesting about this tournament?
Nope. Just that Amulet Bloom one.
Well, yeah. There's that.
So, I didn't get to watch it, but from what I gathered, a lot of people were not exactly happy with Bloom. Now, to be fair, I have never played against the deck myself, but I have seen it, and it looks miserable, and I think that is best illustrated by the Jeff Hoogland's F6 that he did. I don't know if, did you guys see that on the stream?
I didn't see it on stream, but if what happened was he cut out a piece of paper and F6, he totally hijacked that from Brian Kibler.
Yeah. He just wrote F6 and had it on the, I laughed and he laughed and other people were whining about it, but I thought it was funny because Amulet Bloom, once it goes, you just, if you don't have anything to do, you do nothing and you just sit there and you lose. And that's what won. The funny thing, I think, though, is how many people I saw who, apparently also Cedric Phillips was one of these people who said, enjoy the deck while you can, because it's probably going to get banned. And what do you guys think on that?
You know, I didn't actually have, or rather, I don't have a whole lot of experience with the deck. I know people who play it. I've played against it. It's not the be-all, end-all. I also play a deck with Counterspell, so it's a tougher matchup for them against me. But I wasn't really one of the people that was screaming for it to be banned until I watched it this weekend. It just did some incredibly disgusting things on camera and then won the event, which it hadn't done. That was the biggest thing. There had been winning players on Amulet Bloom. I think the one guy who won, he won a GP last summer, right before, or not last summer, excuse me, last fall, right before Eric won his GP, Eric Peters won the GP in Omaha, and Eric Peters played against him in the top eight. Well, that guy ended up being accused of cheating, so all of the info that had been collected about the deck was just kind of thrown out the window. So I didn't have a huge opinion on it, but after watching it goldfish basically all weekend, I don't want to say that they need to ban something from the deck, but something needs to be done about that. It breaks all the fundamental rules of why things in Modern get banned. So
yeah, that seems about right. I think it looks kind of lame and not even really fun to play, but that's just me, and I like playing fair decks. So I mean, I've never been a fan of combo in general, and it just seems like the fact that people far more experienced in Magic than myself are saying that it's no fun and is not a good deck, you know, as far as making the game fun. So, I mean, I'm the type of person who will take their opinions, you know, over it because I don't have that kind of...
That seems totally reasonable to me.
Right. So, that was Bobby Fortainley, who won and was F6'd. And then second place, of course, was Jeff Hoogland, who was playing his, I want to call it like his baby deck that, like, I, you know, I'm sure it existed before he played it, but it seems to just be this thing he obsesses over, and that's Kiki Chord.
Yeah.
And I have to give him props on it because clearly he knows the meta well enough to do really well with a deck that's not like the greatest Modern deck ever. But it's so toolboxy, he can do so much with it. And I think that's what makes it a good deck.
It reminds me of Pod.
It's literally, like, everybody calls Abzan Company Podless Pod because it has the infinite combos in it. But Kiki Chord is a lot closer to Podless Pod than Company is by quite a bit.
By a large margin. Cool. So we have Kiki Cord in second, Blue Red Twin with BBD in third, Naya Company in fourth, Green Red Tron by Alia and Trazi in fifth, sixth and seventh place for both Affinity, and another Amulet Bloom in, I mean, you guys, like I said, know a bit more about Modern than I do. Is there really anything super innovative in any of these lists?
10th place was Black White Eldrazi, which was kind of a deck that kind of, I think, sprung out in this tournament.
Yeah, I forgot about that. A lot of people I saw going on and on about these Black X Eldrazi decks online. What are your guys' takes on?
You know, the crazy thing to me is that it takes a bunch of cards that are almost unplayable in Standard and makes them good in Modern. Now, part of that is because of Eldrazi Temple and Eye of Ugin being insane when you're casting Eldrazi that costs 2 and 3 mana. But I don't want to call this deck a flash in the pan, but I think it's very metagame dependent. Like, the 4 Wasteland Strangler is obviously there as a way to kind of hedge against aggro decks and the like, but the deck, to me, it looks like the deck is designed to beat decks that are playing counterspells. When you cast Oblivion Storm, Blight Herder, or Ulamog, and they remand it, you just get all of the value, because then you can just recast the spell again next turn and make 3/1/1 tokens when you cast an Oblivion, or a Blight Herder, or you get 4 lands or something when you cast an Oblivion Storm. So I think the deck is good, but it might end up just being something that was a great setup for this week.
So do you think that if Modern had a better suite of counterspells, it probably wouldn't be as effective?
I don't know if that's the right way to put it. I think if Modern had a better hard counter, like Mana Leak is pretty much the best hard counter, and it's not really a hard counter, so that's basically the point. But I think if we had something like even Dissolve, if Dissolve cost 2, or if we had a counterspell that cost 2 that was somehow conditional, Logic Knot, I guess, is the closest thing I can think of, some of those spells would be less good against control. Or some of the cards in this Eldrazi deck would be less good against. Gotcha. But seeing as how all of our counterspells are conditional, or like Blight Herder on its own, beats, you can tap out to cast a Blight Herder, and if your opponent, well, your opponent has to be kind of slow, but if they play it incorrectly, you can resolve your cast trigger. They can Mana Leak your Blight Herder, and then you just sack your 3 dudes to pay for the Blight.
That's pretty insane.
Now, you're not going to get that to happen against a lot of people, but still.
Right. I don't know. That sounds a little crazy. I mean, it's awesome, like you said, how we have this deck that essentially is taking cards that aren't even good in Standard, mm-hmm, and playing it in a format like Modern. So I think that is nice to see, but you're right. I don't think it's something that will necessarily last, but I think the hype over it was the funniest part, too. Because if you check Twitter while it was happening, everyone's just like, oh my god, this is the worst deck ever. I'm going to play it and lose to it in sideboard. How do I sideboard? And it's just like, okay, let's calm down. Pretty much, what, like...
calm down, people.
Maybe like 4 Eldrazi? I don't even know. Like, I see this one guy was playing this deck.
As far as I know, it was him and his team that was playing it, but he was the only one that was in day 2. Now, I wasn't watching, so I don't know if that's 100% correct, but...
Right, and so I was just kind of funny to see him blowing up, you know, how to fight this deck, because it's going to be the new thing. No, you don't know that.
Yep, it could just be a flash in the pan.
It's interesting, it's different,
oh, definitely.
It's new, and that's exciting in Modern, but other than that, I don't really see the merits of it. But, you know, you'd never know this, but I've been wrong about Magic before.
No.
I know.
Stop it.
It's hard to believe, I know.
I think one thing I will say is that if you are into speculating, on, and you're probably way past it at this point, but Eye of Ugin's have gone from about $5 to like $25 over the last weekend, and it looks like they're back down to about $15 now, but Eldrazi Temples were $7 as of yesterday afternoon, so I don't know if those have changed or not at all, but yeah, it's definitely made an impact, if nothing else.
All right. Well, is there any other deck lists you guys wanted to touch on at all? Anything of interest to you?
Well, like 23rd, we have that Ascendancy Gifts shenanigans deck.
Yeah, what's the deal with this deck?
It's the Fate Stitcher Jeskai Ascendancy combo.
Yeah, it's nothing
deck, but it's a gifts deck, so it's playing like Elish Norn and Iona, you know, just a one of Snapcaster, Sphinx's Rev, you know. Like, there's just some such. I just thought it was just kind of cute. I don't know.
Brady from Kearney was playing this when we went to Kansas City. He was playing it on day two of the, he was playing it day two in the Modern Open. I don't believe he had the gifts combo, but he had it out of the sideboard. So, I mean, it's definitely been around for a while. It's something that's not new, but it does give you another angle when you're playing with Gifts Ungiven, Unburial Rites.
I also think it's kind of interesting that there are four Grixis Twin decks above that, and like we haven't seen Grixis Twin anywhere near the top eight in a while. It feels like Grixis has just fallen off the map a little bit. Everyone's going back to like traditional ways of Twin, like blue-red.
Well, the Grixis decks have turned into like the boogeyman almost. Well, it's evolved back into Green-Retron, but they were the boogeyman for a while, and everybody was trying to beat him. Well, if you're trying to beat Grixis, whether it be Twin or Control, the Splinter Twin, like just blue-red Twin, is a more consistent, hence better deck against those many varied answers decks that can dig for different answers and things like that. So the move away from Grixis Twin specifically hasn't surprised me a whole lot. The fact that everyone and their dog is still playing Grixis Control makes me kind of interested in where the format's going to go in the future, because Green Red Tron is getting just gigantic. But outside of that, I think Blue Red Twin popping back up kind of makes Grixis Twin show up a lot less.
So, and I think you're right on that, because, I mean, playing Grixis, my bastardized Grixis Delver, it definitely has its weaknesses, and the weaknesses it has, it is very weak to. So that's one thing about, I think, Grixis combination. But one thing I'm kind of looking through the list, you know, and it's actually, yes, we have four Grixis Twin decks all right next to each other from 19th to 22nd, but overall, it's kind of this whole top, what are we at, 32 is all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, you have all kinds of lists. We have Scapeshift in at 14th. The first Abzan list is 13th. We've got Hate Bears at 17th. Merfolk at 18th. Then we got our Grixis Twins. Ascendancy Gifts at 23rd. Jeskai Geist at 24th. Burn at 25th. Ad Nauseam at 26th. Two Trons and Infect, another Grixis Twin. And then my new favorite deck that I would totally build if I had four Scalding Tarns was Blue Red Delver. Just newish version of Blue Red Delver, playing four Abbots, Delvers, Lavamancers, Swift Spears, Snaps, and then other thing.
Yeah, so Blue Red Delver is always going to be a good deck. Or I shouldn't say a good deck. It's always going to be a somewhere between Tier 1 and Tier 2 deck. Like, it's a playable deck all the time, and it gets better the more linear the format gets. So it's not very good against Green Red Tron, so we'll probably see it start to slide out of favor again, because Green Red Tron's been popping up everywhere. But if people are playing Twin decks or Grixis Control decks, things like that, you're in a good spot, because you're playing the same game as they are. Now, you can argue that the Twin matchup is actually really bad, because they do the same things you do, but then they just can kill you out of nowhere, which is true. But I think the Blue Red Delver deck's always going to be around. It's just it's a nice, relatively cheap way to get into the format. It's a fairly easy deck to play, but it's a tough deck to be very, very good with. So I think it's not going to go anywhere. And depending on what bannings look like, we could end up seeing, like, I know this is kind of far-fetched, and I've said it's never going to happen, but if Stoneforge Mystic gets unbanned, we could start seeing a blue-white-red Delver list that's going to look like the Stoneblade decks of Legacy. So this deck is not going to go anywhere.
Yes, I am in agreement. Blue-red Delver, I mean, that was my first introduction into Modern, and the fact that it's been what it is for as long as it has You know, it survived more or less the treasure ban. It just evolved into Grixis, you know, and now it's getting stuff to support the more linear, aggressive strategies and more with the abbots and whatnot. But yeah, so that's modern. Again, the only real big tournament to happen that we're covering. Modern.
Oh yeah.
Modern. Although I am currently working on my modern deck. I actually picked up Misty Rainforest, and there then I'm not allowed to buy anything else.
Bam.
But that's okay.
I know.
You got Misties, and that's all that matters.
Well, I have two of the four I need.
That's two is better than zero.
Exactly. So, working on that Scapeshift.
It's a good deck. I like that deck, actually. I thought about building Scapeshift for a while. But then Taylor showed me Whitleyfleet, and I was like, in love.
You been working on any modern decks or anything, Mike?
To be honest, I am not far away from also completing Scapeshift, although I've always had a good chunk of the deck. It's just something that I finally was like... Actually, when we went to Kansas City, I traded for a bunch of the important pieces that I was missing just to get them out of the way and whatnot. But
I'll say, yeah, the only real expensive parts I'm still missing are some of the lands and Cryptic Commands.
I used to have, like, 3 Cryptic Commands.
Good for you. That doesn't help me now.
But then I traded them for Horizon Canopy, so it's all good.
That seems good. All right, let's talk about interesting things. So... I don't know what that was, but we're going to talk about spoilers.
Woo!
Woo!
Set looks awesome. Set is amazing.
As we all know, the next set of Magic the Gathering is coming out later in January. It is Oath of the Gatewatch. There have been leaks. There has been drama. There has been things happening and people talking about stuff. And
DTI bans everywhere.
Right. And we can't help but get excited and anxious and wondering what's in store for the Plane of Zendikar. So...
Lots of bad shit.
Yeah, let's get right into it. We've got, a little collection of spoilers here. As of recording today, a bunch more were released, and I don't think we're going to be able to catch up. So we're just going to go through what we got, and maybe we'll do some more in the next couple weeks, because there's a lot. All right, so... The first card I have listed here, it came out a couple days ago, last week, I guess. But they released an uncommon cycle of creatures, and so this one is Reflector Mage. It's 1, a white, and a blue. When it enters the battlefield, return target creature and opponent controls to its owner's hand. That creature's owner can't cast spells with the same name as that creature until your next turn.
That is a mouthful.
Yes, it is. But how powerful is it? Is this something someone is going to want to play in Standard, or is this going to stay in Limited?
I think there's a reasonable chance that if we see like a blue-white-red tempo deck, that this could see play in something like that. Like, so the thing is we've had Manowar type variants for forever. I think Manowar got printed in like what, Exodus? So like 10, 15 years ago. And this is a harder to cast but slightly better version of that. It's going to be very good against red aggro decks because you can bounce a particular type of creature. So say you bounce a Monastery Swiss Sphere. You bounce that Swiss Sphere. Your opponent now cannot pay any Monastery Swiss Spheres on their next turn, and you get a blocker that's a 2/3. So just in that aspect alone, I think it's going to show up in a couple places. It's not quite as good as something like, what was the mage from Return to Ravnica? The one red-blue, that was a 0/3. My brain's not working right now.
I have no idea.
And it had haste, and you could tap it to deal 1 damage to all creatures with the same
damage. Oh, is it Staticaster?
Yeah, Staticaster. I'm sorry. I think it's going to be played in the same type of vein as that card, although it's not going to be quite that.
I think it's good just on the fact that you can, like, right now, like, Obzon Aggro is kind of the big deck right now. And just being able on, like, if the blue-white tempo deck is on turn 3 and they leveled up their Warden because you were tapped out, you can just play Reflector Mage and bounce their Warden. They can't play their Warden, and they just lost out on some mana, you know? Like,
yeah, so that's actually...
It does some kind of cool things like that.
That's actually a much better usage of it. your opponent effectively time walked themselves to deal you 2 extra damage, and now you're just saying, sorry, you can't have that thing anymore.
Mike,
now, chances
Mike,
are
you shuffling?
I am, I'm sorry.
You have a problem.
Every day he is shuffling.
Every day
I'm shuffling. I can do it quieter.
All right, continue.
But there's a chance they're going to just slam a Siege Rhino after that. But on that same note, they're going to slam a Siege Rhino anyway. So,
and bouncing a Rhino is kind of like, it kind of stinks, but if it buys you a turn, like if you have a counterspell in your hand though, like that new counterspell, you know, the 4-mana can't be countered Surge. I think it'd be kind of interesting because you bounce the Rhino, and if they draw another Rhino, they just can't cast it. And then when they go to cast the other one, you go, no, it buys
see,
you
the
time.
The only way I can see bouncing a Rhino worth it is if you're literally about to swing for leave, get rid of a block.
Well, that's the thing. There are going to be some situations where that is the case.
Exactly, and that's why Reflector Mage, I think, might actually be worth looking.
Agreed.
But let's move on to some of the more interesting cards that we have here. We've got Linvala the Preserver, a 4/2 legendary creature angel, mythic rare, flying. When it enters the battlefield, if an opponent has more life than you, 5 life. And when it enters the battlefield, if an opponent controls more creatures than you, put a 3/3 white angel creature token with flying onto the battlefield. And Linvala is a 5/5. So this
she is also an angel.
She's so hot. So hot.
Okay, well then.
I love this card.
Okay, so this card to me just screams, I'm losing and need to catch up.
Yes, it's...
Go ahead.
It's kind of a timely reinforcements on a stick.
Honest.
You even get a beater.
Yeah. It's actually... I actually kind of wish that the 3/3 fire was like 3/1/1 flying spirits, but that might be too good. Putting 8 power into play for 6 mana is good enough on its own, but when you spread it out across 4 creatures, that might be too much.
I think that's a little...
Yeah.
But it's still a 3/3 with flying angel, though. And
oh, yeah.
It's still gonna, like, especially if you gain the 5 life and get the angel, you basically kind of just caught up in that turn.
You've definitely set yourself up on the turnaround.
Yeah. I also like how it says when it enters the battlefield, not like, that's a different thing that we're seeing now, like, because a lot of the Battle for Zendikar cards, like all the Eldrazi, were like, when you cast this, you get an ability, but all these creatures are, like, they're not Eldrazi, obviously, but now we're just going back to the inner battlefield effects that are going to do absurd things.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you can counter them, like, if you counter an Illamog, they already blew up 2 of your permanents, so it's sad, but you can counter a Linvala and feel good.
Yes, and all I know about this card is that my wife will be very excited to put it in her Kalia EDH. Yup.
Well, honestly, I'm thinking about putting it in Reanimator because, you know, it's a nice way to get caught up if you need to.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I think this would work very well in some kind of control strategy. This is your kind of, you know, catch up thing, slam it, and then you've got 2 dudes and a bunch of life. You can just kind of catch up from there. So I think it's going to show up. I don't know if it's going to be a major player. It's hard to say at this point, but I'm interested to see.
I think that's a reasonable assessment. It's going to be a good card. It just is. It's a 5/5 for 6 mana that has relevant abilities and it has evasion. It will see playing control.
Yep. All right, so let's move on to the next card. Mike, you want to read us down?
The next one is Remorseless Punishment. 3 generic black sorcery, rare. Target opponent loses 5 life unless that player discards 2 cards or sacrifices a creature or planeswalker, and then repeat this process. Repeat it 1 more time, I'm sorry. I don't know. I'm torn on this card because it seems to me like most of the time your opponent is going to lose 5 life and then lose 5 life and not care. Or sack a creature and sack a creature.
And not care.
Yeah, history has taught us that modal spells that you don't get to choose, that your opponent chooses, are almost always bad.
Just like the mechanic tribute. Just so bad.
Yep.
So bad.
Why? Yeah, I can't see this. I mean, like, this, to me this is a very Timmy card. And it's also, like you said, the modal spells where you don't get to choose the mode. And like you said, you know, the only time it becomes relevant really is when you're casting against your opponent who has like 1 card and no creature.
Yep.
and they're at 4 life or something. You know, like, you have to get into these weird situations for it to win you the game. And then I can see why you're torn, too, though, because, like, you could win the game with it.
Exactly. It like, dangles this little this little carrot in front of you and says, hey, look at me. I do all these things, but I'm a sorcery, so I'm not really that good at what I want to do. And, yeah, you get to happen twice, but all of these things you can do with a different card that is probably more efficient than what I am. So, I don't know. It's going to be a trap, and some people are going to fall into it, but I don't think it will see. This is a bulk rare for me. It's a 50-cent rare.
Yeah, I think agree.
It'd be kind of like one of those like little tiny petty decks, you know, like it's just a one of in the sideboard. But like, let's say like you're playing some kind of black-blue control, and on turn 4 you languish, so they have no board, and then they just play land and pass the turn. And then you just cast this card, and
they lose 10 life and don't care because you're playing a control.
Well, yeah, but then it puts them on a clock. Like, what if they're like...
But it doesn't put them on a clock because the board is completely empty. This is what I'm talking about.
I know. I'm trying to make it look good.
No.
Don't try to justify Tibby cards.
You are doing what I have been doing for the last week and a half since this card got twiddled. I've been looking at it going, okay, there's got to be some scenario where at least two of these things will be relevant. And there aren't. Like, if I cast this spell for 5 mana to get my opponent to lose a planeswalker and 5 life, why am I not just paying 3 mana, putting a threat into play, and using using 3 mana to kill their planeswalker with a bad card that is still better than this one, and then using the other 2 mana to draw a card, or to dig through time, or to put another threat into play. So
I know, I try to make it look good.
Hey, it's fine. We all do this. You just happen to be the one that was doing it on the podcast when other people were listening.
All right. Well, yeah, I bulk rare status, but there's got to be some of those. Let's go to the next card, which is another one from the uncommon cycle. Justin.
All right. It is Relentless Hunter, a generic, a red and a green for a 3/3. And then it has same casting cost for an ability where it gets +1/+1 and gains trample until end of turn.
So is this good enough to get into a standard aggro deck like a Naya or a Ghoul?
I think it is.
It is, but I don't think it does the same thing that those decks want to be doing. I think the card is good enough to be in an aggressive red-green deck. I just think the cards that are already in those decks are better.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, because like, when I first saw this card, you know, being the Atarka red player I am, I was like, oh, hey, I have all that mana. Oh, hey, a 3/3, that'd be great. And, oh, hey, I can bump up this 3/3 and give it trample. Which, you know, all sounds great. But, you know, when you really break it down, okay, turn 3, getting a 3/3, that might not be terrible. Yeah. But essentially, I'm getting a vanilla 3/3. Because hardly ever am I going to have the chance to its ability, plus, you know, whatever I'm also trying to do with the deck anyway. I'm not going to be able to cast, I might be able to get a Become a Man. Maybe.
Yeah.
And that's if I'm lucky. But I'm not going to be able to combo and do that ability or, you know, anything like that. But again, having a 3/3 for 3 might not be terrible.
Exactly. And that's the reason I'm saying the card is good. I don't want to say, like, a lot of times I write cards off and just say...
Limited bomb.
I call them bad. Yeah, definitely. I call cards bad, and I just move on from that. But that's not what this card is. It is a good, solid, uncommon that would see play most of the time. Now, it does have one upside in that it gives you another way to give a creature trample. So, like you were mentioning, you might be able to activate, cast a Become Immense. Well, this, if you don't have the other half of the combo, kind of works out as another half of the combo. So, in that sense, it has upside, but I don't know that it's, like I said, I don't think it's going to be super, super necessary.
Right.
I could see this in, like, kind of a Jund build of aggro. Another reason why I say Jund is because, of course, one of the best one drops right now, Warden, requires black mana to level up. So, like, you could, like, turn 1 Warden, turn 2, level up, and then turn 3, play this guy. I don't know what you're doing on turn 4, but that was just kind of a little
That's thing, because
now you have 2 3-3s. You have 2 3-3s for essentially 3 mana each, but, I mean, I don't know. It would just take some pretty good, like, cards for this card to be bonkers.
Right, and I don't think it'll be bonkers, but I'm going to try to play it. I'm going to see what it works in. I didn't think of Jund. That might be good. I'll have to look into that. Another card.
And I mean, you could also play. I'm sorry. You could also play like Bloodsoaked Champion while it's still around. Like, still a good one drop.
You are really stressing your mana, man.
No, I'm not. It's a very low curve. It's fine.
Yeah. That's why it's stressing the mana.
No, it's fine.
Are you going to be able to fetch?
You're playing like 4 Bloodsoaked and maybe 2 Warden. Just 2 Warden. It's fine.
No, I'm talking about going black one drop into red mana, green mana. That's not going to work perfectly as often as you want it to. Not near as often as you want it.
Yeah, it will.
All right, moving on. We have another card that could work in Jund. We'll see. But I think it might actually help a deck that hasn't been represented much lately. Flayer Drone is 1, black and a red, devoid. It's an Eldrazi drone, an uncommon. First strike. Whenever another colorless creature enters the battlefield under your control, target opponent loses 1 life, and it's a 3-1. Now, I think that the black-red aggro deck that was going around a while with the Bloodsoaked, Forerunner of Slaughter, Thunderbreak, Regents, etc. would love to have this card.
Yeah.
That would seem bad.
I think that's reasonable.
I mean, it's not a hasty threat, but it's still a 3-1 and with another ability, and so, you know, if you're turn 3 with this guy, and then if he survives, you get a turn 4, and you play, you know, another Forerunner of Slaughter or another one of these. You get to ping, and then you're hitting with 3, and then, yeah.
I think it'll be kind of good, like, if Blightherder starts seeing more play, because, like, Blightherder puts in 3 bodies, so it's essentially 3 life. You could just start building kind of these Eldrazi token decks that are kind of centered around Flayer Drone.
I can see.
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
It seems fine. I mean, it's not, like, you're kind of, you've got, like, half of a Zulaport Cutthroat, but you also have 2 extra power for an extra mana, so.
Yeah, that all seems good. That's good uncommon. I think we'll probably be a big player in draft archetype or something, but we shall see. The next card is the Game Day Participation Spoiled, and it'd spoil the regular, too. But you want to take us to this one, Mike?
Yeah, this is a card I will probably play several of. Immolating Glare. It is a generic and white instant uncommon. Destroy target attacking creature.
Oh, so good.
But how good is it? Let's figure it out.
How good is it?
It's okay. Washburn, on a scale of 1 to 10, what do you rate it? This is just an honest question. I wanna see how we stack up.
What's 1 and what's 10? Like, what card is 1?
1 is... Oh, what card?
One is Prism Array.
Okay,
and 10 is Doomblade.
Doomblade?
We're not worrying about color here, because there's not enough good white spot removal, per se.
I think it's at, like, 7 or 8.
Well, hold on. A ten would be like Swords to Plowshares or Path to Exile, I guess.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
If we're probably, just talking flat out,
I think probably like between, I don't know, probably 6 or 7. Like, it's still really good.
So I would literally put this dead center.
About 5.
I would rate this a 5.
Yeah, I can see that.
The main reason is it gets upside because maybe closer to a 6, but it's upside because you get to choose the creature you want to destroy. It doesn't have to worry about a tapped creature or something like that.
Color.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about color, color considerations, things like that. But it doesn't do anything about exiled creatures, which I admit is something that is kind of greedy. But in this format, indestructible creatures are very important to be able to get rid of for a low amount of mana. And right now, 4 is probably the best mana to do that at, and it costs 2 colors. So normally, like in most formats, you're right, I think it would be an 8-ish level card. But I think it's going to be a little lower here just because Ulamog is such a big part of the format. And Planeswalkers are pretty important right now as well, so that could also factor in.
That's fair.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think that it's definitely, if you get these in your packs when you're drafting, get all of them.
Oh, God. Oh, God, take every single one.
Everyone you ever see ever and get it. Even if you're not playing white.
Yeah. Just don't let other people have them. Actually, white. That's bad. Don't think that way.
Splash white.
I'm gonna bet that Kenneth opens three of these in a sealed pool because he opened three Gideon's Reproach in that sealed Battle for Zendikar thing we did.
And lost,
by the way. But we all looked at him and we're like, what? And then I go through mine, I'm like, wow, I got none. Well, we see where all those went.
Yeah, really. But yeah, seems like good removal, especially for limited. Probably see is one or two of, and any maybe like control decks with white in them. I don't see them popping up in many other different strategies.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I'm going to be casting a whole bunch of these. It'll be like a last breath card for me, I think. I think this is going to replace Ultimate Price in the main board of lots of decks. I think there's probably still going to be some cards that say destroy target creature, not attacking creature, that will be played just because sometimes you have to remove a problem creature. But I think this will, for the most part, become the de facto removal spell in white-based control decks.
Fair. All right. Moving on to Gladeheart Cavalry. This I put in strictly for me because it's 5 and 2 green. When it enters the battlefield, you support 6. Supports the new mechanic, where you put a +1/+1 counter on each of up to however many your number is, other target creatures. And whenever a creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it dies, you gain 2 life, and it's a 6/6. Do you know why I like this card? Because I play green in EDH.
Oh, in EDH, this card's probably a pretty good card. You go good 7-drop in Avenger of Zendikar into bad 7-drop in Gladeheart Cavalry, and you just have a broken
army
board. It's just insane.
And see, like, I play Elf Ball, so
even better.
Yeah, where I just have a bunch of 1/1s that are now 3/3s because of Elf Lords, and then put counters on all of them.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to put it. And it's an intro deck rare, so there's an alternate art foil.
Oh God.
Yeah.
So you're okay with lowering the price of your rare? Never mind.
Yes. Yes, I am.
Now, could we see this card in Modern Elves?
No.
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 No. No. To be honest, if you want my God's honest opinion...
It's a stretch.
If you want the God's honest opinion, I would be less surprised to see this pop up in Legacy Elves than in Elf Ball in Modern.
Really?
Really. Because there are a lot of times in Elf Ball, if your opponent is playing a control-style deck, in Legacy at least, if you combo them off with a natural order and you just have a board of 1/1s, well, you don't kill them completely, but now you have a bunch of 1/1s in play because you didn't find a natural order. You couldn't crater hoof them. You just did a bunch of damage. Well, now you have a bunch of 1/1s in play. You found your natural order but couldn't cast it. Now you just cast a natural order for Gladeheart Cavalry and kill them with 2/2s. But you just have Crater Hoof Behemoth, so why would you do that? I just don't see it happening in Modern. I don't know.
That's fair. I was like, it'd be a really big stretch.
So what does Azuri cost to activate? 5?
Yeah.
So why pay 7 or 10 to go get this card with a cord when you can just go get Azuri
activate
and make it give them 2 extra power and trample?
True.
That's the argument, I guess. That's
yes. Fair. This is, to me, this is an EDH card if I've ever seen one. And potentially limited, you know.
Limited. It's not unreasonable.
I think it's pretty good limited.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something, you know, you put at the top of your curve if you're playing a lot of creatures because you want to get the full value out of it. But, you know, it's up to 6, so... You know, as many creatures as you have, you can put counters on them. Seems pretty good. The next card that kind of shows off the support mechanic is Shoulder to Shoulder. It's a common for 2 and a white, and support 2, so you put the counters on 2, and then you draw a card, which, again, I think this is probably more of a limited thing. Could you imagine this card if Heroic was still in Standard?
It'd be pretty good. Before we get too in-depth on this, thoughts on this seeing play in Modern, since we've talked about it with every other card so far.
I don't know Modern well enough to even really know where you would put this.
Modern Heroic.
Oh!
As like a budget deck.
Oh! I like
it. That'd be fun.
I like it. I'd play that.
Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think it's your best option, but it definitely could be a 1 or 2 of, because you're not going to be drawing a whole bunch of cards in that kind of deck. So.
Right. Interesting.
No, but I actually wish this card had been printed with like have it cost 4 and be an instant, or have it not say draw a card and be an instant, something like that. I think it would be a constructed playable card, but as is, I think it's pretty much limited fodder. Yep. I mean, it'll be great in limited, very, very good in limited, but.
Yep. Okay, so I'm going to skip ahead a little bit and talk about the more interesting cards, because I have a lot of cards here. We don't have a ton of time. So, comparative analysis has a surge, 2 and a blue. Normally costs 3 and a blue. Surge, 2 and a blue. Target player draws 2 cards. All right, lightning round. Is this worth playing in anything other than limited?
Possibly. I think it's okay, on its surface, it costs 4. It's an inspiration. So it's a constructed playable card. But I think when you can cast for 6 mana instant, uncounterable if you have a dragon or control a dragon, draw 4. I just think there are better options available. Dig through time as well.
Yep. Justin, any input?
Yep. I'll just go with that.
All right,
yep.
Sounds good. Tyrant of Alakud is a big dragon, 5 and 2 red. Surge, 3 and 2 red. Flying, 5/4, when it enters the battlefield, if its surge cost is paid, it deals 3 damage to target creature player. At 7 mana, probably not too, 60-card constructed playable, but definitely fun for probably EDH. You know somebody's going to try to play it.
Yeah, someone will. Someone will definitely try and play it. Now, keep in mind, there are ramp strategies still in the format.
Right, and, we did have green-red dragons for a while, or, the Atarka strategies, where you're slamming Dragon Lord Atarka. This, if we get a little better ramp, could be a step, in that direction also, but I think it's just too much on the top end. But moving on to the more interesting card is Goblin Dark Dwellers for 3 and 2 red. It's a creature goblin, a creature after my own heart, with menace. And when it enters the battlefield, you may cast target instant or sorcery card with converted mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard without paying its mana cost. And then exile it, as per usual, when you cast things like that from your graveyard.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I've heard people saying that, this could see play in Modern. And I'm sure someone will try to make it work. But I think Modern is really somewhere where this card can do pretty darn well. Do we think it's in Jund or Grixis? Or what are we thinking?
I think this card is going to... So you're right. I've heard more people talking about Modern playability with this card. But I think Standard is probably the place where it's going to shine. I know I'm probably somewhat in the minority of thinking that, but being able to flashback all of the good removal spells in the format for free is just insanely good, especially when Snapcaster Mage has shown us that at any time, being able to use your spells an extra time on top of what you're normally using, flashback is the same way. It's insane. Crackling Doom someone with this card, or... Tribute to Hunger. It's not Tribute to Hunger anymore, but make your opponent sacrifice a creature, 2 colors and a black, Foul Tongue Invocation, destroy a creature with ultimate price. Like, there are lots and lots of awesome things you can do with this card in Standard, more so, I think, personally, than Modern.
So what do you think the hype in Modern is about, this card?
I think people just really want Modern Goblins to be a thing.
Fair.
Yep.
I am one of those people.
Now, don't get me wrong. Like, Goblin Grenade is a card, okay? Goblin Grenade exists, and it's real. People don't like to admit that a 5 damage, 1 mana burn spell that you have to sacrifice a goblin for is a real card. But it is a real card. Now, say you sack a token and Goblin Grenade something out of the way, get in for a bunch of damage, next turn you slam down a Goblin Dark Dwellers, sack the Goblin Dark Dwellers to deal your opponent 5 damage and kill them. It's not unheard of that this card sees play in Mod. I don't want to say that it won't, but I think it will be a new style of goblins versus what we have existing. And I haven't seen anybody talking about that.
I love it. Okay, well, the last one I added was Reckless Bushwhacker. It's another goblin, 2 and a red. Surge cost, 1 haste, 2/1 when it enters the battlefield. If you pay the surge cost, other creatures you control get +1/+0 and haste. Do you think this might work in Standard?
I think this card's busted.
Busted?
It really is. So Goblin Bushwhacker, which was printed in the original Zendikar, was 1 and had 1 red and had a kicker for 1 that had... It was a 1/1 that gave everything you control haste and +1/+0. So it was exactly this card for its surge cost. This card gives everything else you have +1/+0. So it's not as good as Goblin Bushwhacker, because it costs one more.
But it's close.
But well, it's a good card.
It's because it's reckless.
Well, and on that same note, Goblin Bushwhacker didn't have haste itself. It had to use its kicker ability to give it haste. So it's in between being just as good and slightly worse than... I guess there's not really an in-between there.
I was going to say, I'm trying to figure out what that what we would call that.
It's in between being the same thing and being slightly worse than, like, gosh, what's a two-mana goblin with haste? The Mardu Scout. It's almost as bad as that, but it's slightly better, but it's not quite as good as the original.
Interesting. Well, it's those are all the ones I added for this set of spoilers. Now, you guys, well, probably mostly just Justin's, added some of the newer spoilers that have come out in the last couple of days. Why don't you take me through whichever ones you added?
Yeah, Washburn, you go ahead. I only have one card I want to talk about. So, okay. Washburn, you go through all of yours. And
all right. So, a lot of these are green cards because I like to play green, but I think they're good. We have Sylvan Advocate, which is a generic and a green for 2/3 with Vigilance. On its own, that if it just had that, it's still pretty good. But it has another ability where it says, as long as you control 6 or more lands, Sylvan Advocate and land creatures you control get +2/+2.
Okay,
so it becomes a rhino.
Is this like a green Dragon Master Outcast?
Sort of.
Kind of, yeah.
Like, it seems to be part of a cycle, quote-unquote.
Yeah. So, I just thought it was good for the 2-mana 2/3 Vigilance, and then I read the other part, and I'm like, okay, so it's got late-game potential.
Yeah, okay, so keep in mind, it's a 2-mana 2/3 with Vigilance. That alone is good rate. And it's an ally.
Oh, yeah, true.
So that alone right there could have huge implications. Now, and I don't know if it will. Yeah, it makes you wonder, like, if, gosh, what's the... There's a card with Entwine that makes all of your lands 1/1s in Modern. Or I think it's in Modern. If not, throw this idea out the window. But there's a card that makes all of your lands 1/1s, and if you have this in play, now all of your lands are 3/3s, and you can just slam this and deal a bunch of damage. Now, whether that happens or not, I don't know. But a 2/3 for 2-mana Vigilance is good for me. I think on those stats alone, it's going to be a good card.
I like
Fair enough. Second spoiler I have is Bonds of Mortality is a generic and a green for an enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, you draw a card. And then for the low price of 1 green mana, creatures your opponents control is hexproof and indestructible until end of turn.
All right. I like this.
I actually really like this card. So Taylor the other day, was it yesterday or was it this morning? I think it was this morning, actually. He gave me the argument that... The lens that was in Gate Crash, I can't remember what it was called, but it did the exact same thing, but it was an artifact and you had to sacrifice it. If that card didn't see play, why would this one see play? And my argument was it says draw a card on it, which is true. And you don't have to sacrifice it, you can reuse it. So yeah, this lets you
using it.
Yeah, it lets you kill Ugin, or not Ugin, excuse me, Ulamog,
Kozilek.
Huge thing. Makes Immolating Glare look a heck of a lot better against Ulamog. Yeah. I don't know. I've been wanting to build a Bant control deck for a while, and this might help me push it.
I like it because you can slam this, draw your card, use it the next turn, and Immolating Glare.
Yeah, exactly.
On, you know, your Ulamog or whatever. Curve. I'll spend 3 mana to get rid of Mana Monstrosity. I have no problem with that.
Hell yeah.
Alright, well, the next spoiler, which is another green card, Oath of Nissa. For 1 green, legendary enchantment, when it enters the battlefield, look at the top 3 cards of your library. You may reveal a creature, land, or planeswalker card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. And then its second little ability is you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast planeswalker spells.
Okay, so yeah. For 1 green, basically scry 3, draw a card. Basically.
Yeah, you cantrip. Yeah, yeah, you cantrip.
And... Okay, so does the second ability matter?
Yes.
Yeah, not really. It only matters on the last one that resolves. So it's a legendary enchantment. So if you cast 3 of these, you don't care. You just cast 3 ponders. That's awesome.
Yeah.
For green.
Exactly. And then now you can just cast whatever. So picture this. I can cast Oath of Nissa in green, red, Tron, and then cast after having found Tron... I can cast Nicol Bolas Planeswalker off of my Tron pieces plus another land.
Good God, man.
Taking Tron to a whole new level.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's reasonable, but you could do that.
Good Lord. Odin's Raven, that's disgusting.
The beard of Zeus.
Good. I feel disgusting just imagining it happening.
I just love the cantrip for one green. Like, that's just...
Yeah, it's very good.
So
this card will see lots of play.
We haven't seen the whole Oath cycle. We've got Nyssa, we've got Chandra, and I think, did we get Jace?
We got Jace and Gideon.
We have all four of them, actually.
Oh, we do. I haven't seen the Gideon one.
Is there going to be a black one going to be?
Probably not. No.
See, that makes me sad.
Yes. No, it doesn't. The Chandra card's bad enough for black. Here, I'll go over it really quick since we're talking about it.
Yeah, why not? Let's do an Oath cycle quick.
Oath. Okay, so Oath of Chandra says it's another legendary enchantment, rare, one generic and a red. When Oath of Chandra enters the battlefield, it deals 3 damage to target creature and opponent controls. Note that it says a creature, not creature or player, which is the entire reason this card's bad. At the beginning of each end step, if a planeswalker entered the battlefield under your control this turn, Oath of Chandra deals 2 damage to each opponent. So she's kind of a control card, but at the same time, you can only trigger the Pyroclasm. If you had a planeswalker enter play this turn, and if the enchantment is still in play at the end of said turn.
Right. That does kind of put a damper on things. I mean, I could see that doing really well in, you know, like a Super Friends EDH or something.
Definitely.
You know, in Standard or any other format, really, I don't see that being reasonable.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Right. Which ones do we still need to... Oh, I'm doing Oath of Jace.
Okay, you can have...
Unless you want me to do all of them.
Well, I haven't seen... Well, you know what? Yeah, you said you have the left
I have cards. Them. Yeah, I have them all right here. All right,
you just do that then.
All right, Oath of Gideon is 2 generic and a white. Again, legendary enchantment rare. When it enters play, put 2/1/1 white core ally tokens into play, which is good enough on its own. The second ability says each planeswalker you control enters the battlefield with an additional loyalty counter on it.
Oh,
yep.
So good.
Cast Gideon, keep Gideon after making an emblem.
And now you have 2/2/2s.
Yes.
And whatever else you play. Like, you could have turn 1 Warden, turn 2 Level Up, turn 3 Oath, and then turn 4 Gideon, and now you have a 4/4 and 2/2s.
Oh, yes.
That's insane.
God!
Yeah.
Next!
All right. Next! Oath of Jace is, you guessed it, 2 generic and a blue, another rare legendary enchantment. When Oath of Jace enters the battlefield, draw 3 cards, then discard 2 cards. At the beginning of your upkeep, scry X, where X is the number of planeswalkers you control. Now, in my opinion, this is the one where you just ignore the second ability. It could come up as relevant at some point, but usually by that point, you're kind of just already winning the game. If you have... more than one planeswalker in play, you're just winning the game, most likely. But drawing 3 cards and discarding 2 cards for 3 mana is not bad at all. It does suck a little bit that it's sorcery speed, but you don't want to play 4 of these either. It's one of those things that you want to play like 2 of as a supplement to your better draw package.
Fair. Wow. All right. So, I mean, what do we think of this Oath cycle overall?
I think they're good.
I don't think they're all good, but I do like that they're trying something different or something that they haven't revisited for a while. It's always refreshing to see that Morrow and the guys are not doing the same thing over and over and over again, because we've gone through that before. And even if they're revisiting older stuff and doing it just slightly different, it just shows that they're committed to trying to make the game different.
Yeah, so, I mean, is enchantments having effects like this that effectively make them in, is that something we want to see a lot? I think it is. I think it makes enchantments better for constructive, you know, competitive play.
I do. Right now, there are 2 types of enchantments you see most often. You see enchantments that are prison-style cards, so like Detention Sphere, Oblivion Ring, Journey to Nowhere, stuff like that. Stasis Snare, for those of you who are more familiar with just this format. Or you see enchantments that give you a continuous effect. So something like the Sieges. Those are Outpost Siege, Palace Siege, stuff like that. Those are going to be things that do something once a turn and do the same thing every single turn. So they're good to have around. But I think attaching a spell to them as well as giving them that secondary type ability is awesome. Like, there's only upside there. So, cool. Yeah, I think they're positive.
Cool. All right, so what's the next spoilers? Justin, are those still yours?
The land and the big dumb green guy is mine, but I think the color of the spell is Mike's.
Spatial contortion. It was definitely Ethan that posted this, but this is another of the cards I'm super excited about. So you guys get excited about cards that are like big dumb idiots or creatures with cool abilities and stuff like that. I get excited about instant spells that kill things. Like, why am I that guy?
Nerd.
Anyway, Spatial Contortion is our first actual colorless card on this list. It is a generic and a colorless mana. That means it costs one of any color and then one specifically colorless. It is an instant uncommon. Target creature gets +3/-3 until end of turn. Now, I was a lot higher on this card until they printed that stupid white card, Glare, some Immolating Glare. I was a lot higher on this card until that got printed, and I think it kind of obsoletes it. But there are going to be decks that want this spell. It's going to be hard to cast in a lot of control decks, but there are going to be decks that want to cast this.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, and I just added a card to the document I'll talk about later, but that I think kind of goes along with it. Justin, why don't you finish out your cards here?
All right, well, I have the Hissing Quagmire, Giggity, and it's the green-black and it enters battlefield tapped, to add a black or a green, and then for a generic, a black and a green, Hissing Quagmire becomes a 2/2 black and green elemental creature with death touch until end of turn. It's still a land.
All
right. I'm just glad to see the black green man land, even though I wish it would have been a 1/3. Wish it would have been a 1/3.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I wish the red blue land had been a 2/2. So
it's fair, but I do like Hissing Quagmire. Okay, it, like all like the man lands they're doing, it just finishes the cycle, and it just feels so good.
Yeah, is this where we want black green to be, or do we want it more as a 1/3 or you know something with?
I would like it to be a 1/3 with death touch, but
you want it to be able to block certain things and not die to it and still kill that thing. That's what he's complaining about.
Right, right.
Hey, I play Siege Rhino, and I want a card that's better than everybody else's. And when it's still the best of the manlands printed in this set, I'm going to complain because it's not what I wanted.
Right, right. I'm greedy sorry. Bastard. Got it. All right.
But it is definitely, it's the best of the three that got printed in Oath, by far.
Yeah.
You are probably.
And the last spoiler I have is Worldbreaker, which is a green and 6 for a 5/7. It's devoid. When you cast Worldbreaker, exile target artifact, enchantment, or land, and it has reach. And then it has an ability of 2 and specifically a colorless mana. Sacrifice a land, return Worldbreaker from your graveyard to your hand. This card is insane. I love it.
Yeah, it's
slight
very good.
Correction. It's sacrifice a land with a colon.
Yeah, you can do it while it's in your graveyard. That's actually the only place you can activate it, but still.
Right. Well, and that just means sacrifice a land is part of the cost.
Yes, you have to pay it, and then the ability triggers. Yes, that is correct.
So that does make a difference in some situations. Generally, it's not going to matter, but it does. So, what do we think though? I mean, 5/7 with reach, and we know exiles. It's castable. You know, we know that it's something somebody can slam in standard right now.
Yeah, I will literally go back to what I said earlier about the Tyrant of Valakut. There is a ramp deck in standard, so this is not something I would rule out ever. It's an acidic slime that's flat out better.
It's so much better than acidic
slime. Honestly, doesn't cost that much more, and you can rebuy it. This will see play in standard, and actually has a very good chance of seeing play in Modern Tron. It's in the colors that the deck is already playing. Sacrificing a land kind of sucks when you're playing, when 12 of your lands are very important for you to have in play.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very good. It's kind of like a stopgap.
Yeah.
Not to mention this card has reach.
Yeah.
Which is relevant.
That's the part that kind
of it brick walls everything.
Yep.
I love
Goodbye, Ojitai.
Well, yeah. Wow. Oh, God, that's just, it's good. I mean, I keep reading it, and I'm just like, that's good stuff.
It's very good. Awesome. It is definitely very good.
Worldbreaker likes the nom-nom on Ninja Ties.
That seems to be what's probably going to happen pretty frequently. I mean, from what I've seen, it just looks like these Eldrazi ramp strategies in Standard are just going to get better, and I don't know how I feel about that.
Can't beat them, join them.
That's a good point and a very compelling argument. All right. Thank you. So I had four more cards I just added that I wanted to talk about. The first one being a reprint of an equipment, Bonesaw, or as some of you may know, Bonesaw is ready! I just wanted to do that on our podcast. Yeah. Sorry to anyone's ears who just had to be a part of that.
It's okay.
Gives creature plus one, plus zero when you equip it. Here's the most Timmy card I think I've experienced since I started playing Magic. Hedron Alignment
is
two and a blue. Enchantment, hexproof. It's a hexproof enchantment.
Boom.
At the beginning of your upkeep, you may reveal your hand. If you do, you win the game if you own a card named Hedron Alignment in exile, in your hand, in your graveyard, and on the battlefield. And then for one in a blue, you can activate it to scry one.
Oh, Leighton was going hard on this card today.
Yeah. This is Timmiest thing I've ever seen. And here's what I want to know. I don't care. No one's going to play it in Standard. I don't know that. I want someone to break it in Modern.
There's nothing good I can find about. Well, it says scry one on it.
Yeah.
That's the best thing I got. Otherwise, there are 183 cards in a 184 card set, and this is not one of them. That's pretty much how I feel about
this card.
You really
hate it that much?
It doesn't do anything.
You can literally win.
You just win.
The problem is everybody's like, well, I'm playing Dig Through Time, so I can just exile one of them when I cast my Dig Through Time. I can just discard one to this Oath of Jace card that I now have, and all I have to do is resolve the other one and then cast another Dig Through Time to find the other one. Well, yeah, but is that actually all you're doing the whole game? No, not a fucking chance. You're trying to kill the creatures your opponent has and not die.
You just can't die.
Oh, wait. You mean I can just play a 56-card deck and have these in them? Man, I better go do that. No, you should play a 56-card deck and then play four better cards than this that are probably win conditions and beat them faster and more efficiently than you would by playing this piece of garbage enchantment.
Mike, I just don't think you realize that this card is a win condition.
It's how you win the game.
You're right, it does. And then when I read this card and it said, at the beginning of your upkeep, you may reveal your hand. If you do, you win the game. I stopped reading. Because all of the cards that say that are unplayable.
That's your opinion.
The only card I have played that says on it, you win the game, is Door to Nothingness. And the only reason I played that card was because you could cheat it into play.
Well, I still want somebody to break this in Modern just to say they did.
Yeah, it just has to be one time. Just needs to win one tournament.
It needs to show up on camera at a tournament. I don't care if it's round one.
I was going to say, you has to. There's no way you are ever going to get your wish if you want this to win a tournament.
You have to win.
Be broken, though. All right.
It needs to just be broken.
More serious discussion. Let's talk about the blue-red man land, Wandering Fumarole, which I learned is not a type of... it enters the battlefield tapped. It adds a blue or red to your mana pool for two, a blue and a red. Until the end of turn, it becomes a 1/4 blue and red elementer with an ability. For zero mana, you can switch this creature's power and toughness until end of turn, and it's still a land. What do we even do with it?
Don't get Mike on this. No, don't get Mike on this train. No. He needs this card.
For those of you who don't know how to beat this card, when your opponent attacks with it, take one. And if they choose to turn it into a 1/4, you deal it one damage somehow.
You mean a 4/1.
You deal it one damage somehow. And then when your opponent goes, oh, in response, I'll turn it into a 1/4 now. Oh, wait, that doesn't work either. It dies to every burn spell in existence that targets a creature.
That is
literally everyone. As long as you play it correctly. If you allow your opponent to turn it into a 4/1, then you might not be able to kill it.
That is true. And I think that, you know, honestly, the amount of play will be able to hit you with it would probably surprise you.
Yep.
You know, the people who are going to get in there and not realize that, oh, that you can do that in response. That this card is going to just flip some.
Yep. Some people will. Someone's going to throw a table.
Yeah.
When they hear this card doesn't die to Bolt, and then they try and play it, and their opponent goes, in response to you making it a 4-1, I'll bolt it. And they go, okay, turn it into a 4-1. It turns back before your bolt resolves. No, it doesn't.
Yes, yeah, you... yep.
People are going to flip tables.
Yes. I mean, I think our verdict is mostly it's not great. I think it will see play.
Yeah, if you're in the market for a 1-4 attacker, that doesn't cost you a card, this is it. Because it is decent in that regard.
Yep.
But it's not a 4-1. And probably will not ever be a 4-1 unless your opponent has no cards.
It's just a Deceiver X arc that just beats. It's just a 1-4.
Yeah. Oh, but I mean, it can also be a hell of a blocker.
True. You could just block a Warden at the 3-3 and you'd be fine.
And if, you know, and this is, again, one of those kind of fringe situations, but if you're ahead or if you're flooded, you know, if you have more lands, then you can sacrifice it pretty much. Yeah, and trade.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, it has its uses. I think it will probably end up as a 1 or 2 of in decks.
Definitely.
Couldn't tell you how good it is. Now, the last card I added was more for me because it is me accepting the fact that I may not be able to play red for much.
Yeah, good old Infest coming back.
Flaying Tendrils, 1BB, Devoid. All creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn. If a creature would die, exile it instead.
Drown in Sorrow. I got so happy
and comfortable because Drown in Sorrow was gone. And now here I am, faced with it again. Thank God they don't have Bile Blight.
But.
I want to
have Bile Blight again.
No.
Yeah, Bile Blight is really good.
Well, and, you know, Drown in Sorrow was really made mono red not as good. But, yep. I mean, Origins Standard, before Battle for Zendikar came out, mono red was a dang good deck. And you could still play Drown.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it doesn't invalidate the deck by any stretch.
It just makes it hard.
Exactly.
It makes you not overextend. But, it teaches people to not overextend.
But Justin,
well, it doesn't really teach people.
Justin, does I think that. You're ignoring the fact that overextending is how that is.
Well, yeah.
Is a reasonable argument.
Exactly. Don't play the deck.
Hey, do you want to be on this podcast? Do you want to be on this podcast?
I just turned 3 Tendrils, turn 4 Rhino, and it's all good.
That will actually happen, and that makes me angry.
All right. So, the only card that I want to talk about is Storm Chaser Mage. It costs blue and red. It is a gold card. Human Wizard, uncommon. Flying Haste Prowess, and it is a 1/3.
Ooh, that tickles my fancy, and I don't play blue.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Mike's excited.
Counterburn?
This is clearly a spicy meatball.
Spicy meatball!
What do we do with it?
We play, or we try and build the tempo deck, whether it's a 2-color tempo deck or a 3-color tempo deck. I am unsure, but you...
Jeskai? Void. Teemer? Blue-red?
I think Jeskai. Or even blue-red. Blue-red aggro wouldn't be horrible.
And see, I just think Teemer because I still want to put Become a Man.
Well, if you play like a Jeskai Prowess build, though, you can have like some number of Seekers, too. And then you just go Monastery Mentors, and then you have like Monastery Whispers too. And so you play
a Jeskai Prowess deck.
Yeah, you're just playing this big dumb deck.
I might actually have to go back and look at Paul Rietzel played a Prowess deck before the Standard Super League a couple weeks in a row, and I might have to go revisit that one after looking at this card. Yeah. But yeah, I'm most excited about this.
Yeah, I think this with Seeker of the Way.
I like the. Now that we're going through, the card next to it, Void Grafter, is actually kind of a good card. Generic blue-green 2/4, Devoid with Flash. When it enters the battlefield, another target creature you control gains Hexproof until end of turn. Ooh,
that's pretty.
It's very good and limited. Very, very good and limited.
I say it seems pretty situated.
It's not bad.
Well, you just sit there and you hold it until they go to kill like your one dude, or like they try to do some shenanigans. Like,
yeah, but it costs three, so do you just never cast anything
for a 2/4?
What he's saying is, in the decks that you're playing blue-green in, why are you holding that card in your hand and holding up three mana instead of just being proactive?
Give it time. Give it rotation.
There's a million and a half spoilers. We don't have time to go over every single one. Some of us have to work. It's not me. So, did you guys have anything you wanted to say before signing off?
No.
I don't
think so. No? Never forget the Green Lantern Oath.
Okay.
That's all I got. I don't know. True. All
right. Well then, as always, you can follow me on Twitter at NerdMeat. Also, recently I did create a Twitter page for the podcast itself, and so you can follow that at Midwest Magic MTG. And that will all be in the show notes. You can follow Justin at jmoney981 and Mike at borofills. What's the number on that one?
MTG.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For Twitter, yeah, it's MTG.
Yeah, and as always, you can catch us and many other amazing podcasts on the MTGcast Network, who do so much work to make sure all this great magic content gets delivered directly to your ears. Next week, is there an SCG tournament this weekend?
Grand Prix Oakland. That's not this weekend. It's the next weekend, I think. No, Grand Prix Oakland is over the Gatewatch sealed, so it can't be either of the next two weekends.
Gotcha.
Shit, I don't know.
All right, well, probably I'm sure there's a tournament.
Probably SCG, yeah. Somewhere is happening.
We'll talk about that next week and probably some more spoilers. So with that said, in brightest day and blackest night, no evil shall escape our sight. Let those who worship evils might beware of my power. Green Lantern's light. This has been Midwest Magic. We'll see you next week.